I can tell you that having like 3 to 6 months of cash in the bank is probably one of the biggest accelerants for your income as a freelancer, because it lets you fire bad clients. It lets you turn down bad jobs. It lets you make investments in yourself. It gives you like this psychological, this huge psychological boost. It's hugely freeing to take big chances on yourself that in my experience pay off more than any other investment I've ever done.
Hey, welcome to the Double Your Freelancing Podcast, where our goal is to help you get better clients, make more money, and live a happier and healthier life freelancing. And now, the founder of DoubleYourFreelancing.com, Brennan Dunn.
Hey guys, I'm super excited to share with you today's interview with Ryan Wagner. Ryan and I go back 3-something years now, I think. He originally took my consulting masterclass, and then I worked with him one-on-one for about a year. And we finally actually met last year at the Double Your Freelancing Conference in Norfolk, Virginia. So anyway, I wanted to bring him on the show because he's just got this amazingly successful mobile consultancy business. He's on almost, I think, pushing $1 million a year in revenue and or profit for his business, doing mobile consulting, which I talked to a lot of iOS developers, and a lot of them struggle to make, you know, 100K plus. Ryan's killing it doing high six figures in revenue with his consulting business. And he's all around just a really sharp guy. But why I wanted to bring him on specifically was he is really, really good at kind of cash flow management. And I know we've been talking, like in the last episode, we talked to Diana Huff on cash flow management. But Ryan's got a really good perspective on personal finance and splitting up business from life and everything else that I wanted to capture that story. I wanted to continue the discussion that we had back at Double Your Freelancing Conference on the podcast and share it with you. All right. So here is Ryan. Hey everyone, I want to introduce you to Ryan Wagner. Ryan is a good friend. We go back how long? Like 3-4 years now?
Something yeah, it's like been that? It's been 3-4 years.
Wow.
I read the original Double Your Freelance Rate ebook.
VV.1.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you were at I just saw you actually in Norfolk at the conference.
Yeah, it was a great time.
So I think that was actually the first time I think we met in person.
Yeah, like a lot of people, I have tons of internet friends, and you hope to meet up at a conference or something.
That's not as bad as back when you used to talk about internet friends, you know, 15, 20 years ago. It was a little different back then.
Yeah.
But cool. So before we get it, we're going to be talking about finance. But before we get into all things financial, let's talk about you and your background.
Sure. So I've been freelancing for, it's almost 9 years actually this year. So coming up on the 10-year anniversary next year, that'll
Congrats.
Be good.
Nice.
Yeah. So so I do website. I started with website development consulting, and I've moved into mobile now. So I really focus on helping startups build an MVP of their mobile app. And part of that is helping them figure out what not to build. So there's a product management consulting aspect of that as well. And my background actually was product management before I started doing development. So that's kind of what I do with my day-to-day role as a freelancer.
Cool. So, you know, one of the things that that really impresses me about what you've been doing is you're very successful. You're a very successful consultant. And on top of that, it seems like you've been able to iron out a lot of the feast and famine cycles that are pretty standard, I think, with a lot of freelancers. You know, for people who are still kind of getting their flywheel up for, you know, getting, you know, predictable revenue and predictable client work and everything else, what are some things that maybe that you've done wrong or things that you've seen others do wrong that lend to getting, you know, falling into financial chaos, for lack of a better way of putting it?
Sure. That's a long list of things that I've done wrong. I've been doing this for a while, and I definitely did a lot of things wrong in the early days in particular. But I would say for me, a big one, this isn't necessarily exactly related to personal finance, although I'll come back to that, but is just, you know, whenever things get busy, stopping any kind of business development and letting the pipeline go dry. And then, you know, whenever something falls through, or, you know, a client decides to move on or a project wraps up, then I'm scrambling to get work. And, you know, there's, in my experience, you know, just for my particular industry, it'd be different for everybody, but for my industry and deal size and so forth, there's at least a 6 to 8 week lead time, usually from the time that I'm looking for work hard to the time that I am starting to get pretty busy. And that's a long time to go if you are not in a good personal finance situation. So, you know, these days, like, I'm always doing business development. I don't always do it at exactly the same level, just kind of depending on what's going on, but I kind of have a background process now where I'm always doing some business development. So that's not exactly a personal finance answer exactly, but, you know, the thing with personal finance for freelancers is that it's so tied to your business. Whenever you're working for yourself, like, your personal finances and your business finances, while they may and should be separated in terms of bank accounts and accounting and so forth, the emotions and behaviors for them are really intertwined, and they definitely have a big effect on each other. So,
yeah, I mean, you know, conventional wisdom from just about anyone who specializes in kind of small business finance is to cut yourself a salary, live off that, and then you treat, you know, business revenue is one thing, your personal income is a separate thing. But I like you were saying, I mean, firsthand, most people totally violate that. It's just, you know, it's whatever's my business account. I mean, the fact of the matter is, a lot of us, we don't have employees, we don't have overhead, like true overhead in a big way, which always makes me laugh whenever people talk about, like, not wanting to get hit with, like, this Stripe 2.9% fee or whatever and not lose out on that. I'm like, do you know what, like, a real business gets hit on with their overhead, like how low their margins tend to be? Whereas for, I mean, a lot of freelancers, our margins are almost near 100%. You know, when we get paid, when an invoice comes in, I know me personally, I used to look at, you know, if I got a big deposit check, wow, look at all this net new money I have, you know, instead of actually treating it as, okay, this is new revenue for the business, but I'm still going to take my monthly salary and just live off that. And maybe I'll take quarterly distributions or something.
Right. I mean, definitely in my early days, I, like a lot of people, did not do the kind of, like, stable salary the same every month. I think that's really difficult whenever you're first starting out, whenever it's hard to know what to pay yourself as a salary, because, you know, what you're bringing in month to month often is not enough to pay, like, whatever salary is that you need to support yourself on. And that's, I think, where a lot of freelancers struggle with, like, from day one, in terms of, like, the personal finance side of freelancing, is that they can't figure out, you know, like, one month I bring in $2,000 and the next month I bring in $7,000. And, you know, it just kind of goes up and down like that. And yet I need to be paying myself, you know, a stable amount every month. And how do I do that? And how do I budget for that? And, you know, once you throw taxes into the mix, I think it starts to get really frustrating and stressful for a lot of freelancers who are kind of, like, right on the edge of making enough.
So what did you, I mean, so you mentioned you had, like, a 2 month lead time between, you know, getting a lead potentially and then closing them. And it sounded like early on you weren't doing, I mean, right now you're doing active and ongoing biz dev, but before it sounded like you weren't. I mean, how did you personally stabilize that kind of 2 month gap? Like, did you just have a lot in savings and you draw off that, or, like, what did you do?
Yeah. So, I mean, I kind of developed all of this over the years. And it's kind of a combination of things. I think that any one of these could work for somebody, but for me, it's just worked out to be a combination. So the first thing is just to have a monthly buffer, and how big that buffer needs to be really depends on, you know, we don't have to go through the math, but it basically depends on, like, how long your lead time is for projects and how much difference there is between, like, your, like, lowest average month and your highest average month, and, you know, where your kind of monthly budget falls within that. So some people are just going to need more buffer than others to get them through the lean months. And I also started focusing more on recurring revenue, not as a core strategy for my business. So, like, today, in general, no more than probably 25% of my revenue is recurring, but it's enough that on a really bad month where I had no, if I have no project revenue, I can pretty much live off of my recurring revenue. So that puts me in a really good, just in terms of my personal budget. So that's puts me in, like, a good psychological place, I feel like, where I have the freedom to to be able to count on a certain amount of revenue, as much as you can count on anything, but also be able to not have to. So one thing I don't do that some other freelancers do is I don't sell projects 6 or 12 months in advance. I don't want to do that. I'm always in the process of raising my rates and trying to hone my value offering, and I don't like to sell any more than 2 to 3 months out. So this gives me the freedom to kind of have some base of predictable revenue, but then also be able to continue to increase my pricing and play around with the offerings that I'm giving to clients without kind of being locked in for the next 6 to 12 months. Yeah. So having a buffer, more recurring revenue. And then, I mean, a huge thing for us was we built up a lot of debt over the first few years of freelancing. We had some debt before that. And we also we had never really saved too much for retirement. I mean, I started saving for retirement whenever I was younger, but put it on hold whenever I started freelancing, and we didn't really have an emergency fund. And so getting really, when I say we, I'm talking about my wife and I, getting very disciplined about our budgeting, getting rid of our debt, and building up an emergency fund, even though it was really difficult, like that took us years to get to that place. But every kind of step we took down that road, we found it to be just like a lot less stressful. And that lack of stress really gave us a lot of freedom for our business decisions.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, all right. So it sounds like a few things that you've done are, I mean, the big one that I heard was you have a baseline, which is your retainer revenue that you're using, or that recurring revenue that you're using to even things out. So that is basically the fill in the blank stuff for, I mean, are you at the point now where your retainer revenue is livable, that you could survive solely off of that?
It's very close. So the probably not quite post-tax, but it's pretty close. Like I said, it's a small portion of my kind of overall revenue. So I'd have to have like a couple of really bad months on projects for it to be an issue. But you know, starting your month with 60 or 70% of your budget already covered, regardless of what projects you're doing or you've landed for that month, is a good.
Sure.
A good,
sure. I mean, especially when you compound that with, I mean, that's just less that you need to draw out of savings or your available cash or whatever else. The other thing I heard was that you're doing a lot now with actively toward both retirement and other ways of saving. So what do you, I mean, do you have a, are you just doing a set amount each month, or do you do percentage per invoice? Like how do you do that?
Yeah. So I, with retirement, like whenever we were, you know, in the first few years of freelancing, my wife is also a freelancer. So we have, we both actually quit our jobs in 2007 within a week of each other to both freelance, which was stressful. I would not recommend that. and so we struggled for the first few years of freelancing, like to make enough and to just kind of figure all this out. And once we started to come out of that a little bit, we started putting money into retirement specifically, into IRAs. And we basically did a set amount each month, which some months it was tough. And in fact, like, so we were using Fidelity and I set it up to be automatic. And there were a few months in that first year in particular where like we just couldn't do it. Like it just was not going to happen. And so I would have to go in and they had an option where you could skip it for that month. And I felt like that was actually a lot better. Like I had to actively make the choice not to do it in a given month, as opposed to like actively make the choice to do it, which we, you know, had that situation for years and had not saved anything to speak of.
Yeah. I mean, it's like with me, like my brother-in-law is actually a, you know, he does all my retirement stuff, or he used to do a lot more of it though. But he, I just remember at the end of the year, every year, he'd be like, so for you and your wife, do you have 11 grand to put in your IRA? I'm like, I don't have 11 grand sitting around. And, yeah, I mean, it's that same thing that when, like what I've done now, which has been tremendous, is I just put a few hundred a week into various accounts. And yeah, I mean, I haven't gotten to the point where I needed to stop any of that, but you're right. I mean, if I had to consciously say, okay, this is running on fumes right now, I can't do it this week or for the next few weeks, that's much different than needing to be at the point where you're needing to actively remember, oh, I should log right into Fidelity and dump some money in.
Exactly. So the default, I feel like, should be, you know, that I'm going to do it this month, and you have to take an action to not do
it. It's like you treat it like a bill. I mean, I treat mine like a bill, like a monthly bill.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So that in the early days, that was really important to us. And I really dislike paying taxes. So we eventually outgrew the IRA strategy. And now we do, we both have solo 401k accounts.
Okay, so I have a SEP IRA, which I think gets up to, I mean, I haven't maxed it out, but you can max it out with 53,000 a year or something.
Insane. Yeah, that's what the solo 401k is.
Okay.
As well. So
yeah.
Yeah, it's insane. And it's something I think that, like, if you are a successful freelancer, like, you should definitely be taking advantage of that stuff. Like, we have some amazing tax advantages that other, like, that employees don't have. And that's a good example.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I have friends who run a business and they also, like, they don't use SEP. I mean, I assume SEP IRAs are similar to the solo 401ks. Although the problem with the SEP IRAs is you need to offer it and match it to every employee in your company. So if you're a company of one or two, like me and my wife are the only employees of my company, it's totally fine. But yeah, I mean, you're right in that we have, I think solo business owners have a ton of advantage because we can route a lot of expenses through our companies. We have great retirement and investing, you know, opportunities, really. So yeah, yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So that's what I do for kind of the retirement side. And then just like you, I have automatic withdrawals. I do it on a monthly basis, but I have automatic withdrawals for things like I have some investment real estate that I bought years ago that I'm paying down mortgages on more aggressively and just putting money aside for this and that. So, yep. Automatic as much as possible, which is, I mean, that's the majority of how we do all of our personal finances at this point. I'm a big fan of I Will Teach You to Be Rich by Ramit Sethi. And he, like, I think this is the first place I picked that up, which is like my wife and I, whenever we're being good now, we do the whole like budget, like every dollar and be super disciplined about it. But, you know, whenever things get stressful or crazy, at the very least at the beginning of the month, like we're paying everything that we need to, including for our future. So retirement or these other savings items or whatever. And if that month, like we spend more on eating out than on, you know, some other trivial thing, like it's not really a big deal in the grand scheme of things.
Because the main things are already paid off.
Yeah. So like picking like the big important buckets and paying those, you know, on the first of the month, like the first thing, like just as if it was your mortgage or something else really important.
Well, I'm the same way. I mean, I have all of my mortgage. The girl's school is paid beginning of the month too. That's a check though. But the car, the mortgage, I mean, everything is first of the month. And the reason for that is, well, two reasons, like you just said, gets it out of the way. And now whatever else is whatever else. Other reason for me is I just don't want to, I'd rather know, okay, it's end of the month. I need to just dump a bunch of money into checking, let it do its thing. But I've also, I mean, I've gotten to the point now where I pay myself a salary and I make sure that this, so, you know, as and this gets into like U.S. legal stuff and everything. But, you know, as I'm an S corp and so I have an S election on my corporation, which means I need to pay myself a salary. I think LLCs don't need to do that. But
right. That's correct.
Yeah. A corporation does. So I pay myself a salary and that salary, I've intentionally structured it to be able to meet all of my monthly obligations. And that way I have my, I'm using Gusto, which used to be Zen Payroll, to do my payroll. I just had that happen a few days before that first of the month. And then it's just really easy, you know,
yeah,
like it's exactly. So super simple.
Yes. I unfortunately can't do the S corp, because I live in Nashville and, Tennessee has no state income tax. So salary is not taxed, but the profit distributions are taxed.
Got it.
And so okay, like so. The whole, you know, pay yourself a salary and then do profit distributions strategy does not really work here. So
interesting. Okay. Yeah. I didn't know, that makes Tennessee more attractive. I didn't know that they didn't have a state income tax. I'm from Florida where I'm used to not having that too. And then moving up to Virginia.
It's amazing.
Yeah, no, it is. It really is.
Especially as your income starts to grow, it starts to be so I lived in New York.
Well, you just moved out of Manhattan. Yeah. I mean, you want to talk about tax cuts because you had a city tax there too, right?
Yeah. So there's a state, there's a city, and then there's actually another unincorporated business tax because they don't recognize S corps or LLCs. So it's like another 4% on top of everything else. So my marginal income tax rate dropped like 16% whenever I moved out of Manhattan. Not to mention my cost of living dropping like literally in half. So,
wow.
Yeah, it was like a very good move financially. I really missed the city, but I financially it was a no-brainer.
Uh-huh. Wow.
So
it's incredible. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It's definitely interesting. I was in San Francisco, and prior to New York, and they're both amazing cities, but sure.
Cost of living.
I just got to the point where, none of my clients are local. They never have been, really. So I had clients in New York and I had clients in San Francisco whenever I lived in both places, but I often never met with them. If I did, it was like a quick coffee meeting that they would have been fine doing on the phone or fine. Sure. On Google Hangouts or whatever. And then we never see each other again. And I was just, if you don't have to live someplace, like the opportunity for kind of cost of living arbitrage is just so high that I just felt like I couldn't stay anymore in those cities.
I mean, I completely understand. I mean, the extreme step is eventually going to like Thailand or something, which is what a lot of people in our field do.
If I was single and had no kids, I probably would live.
Be a nomadic and
somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's okay.
That's not how life is. So you've got, so it sounds like what you've done is, you have as the backbone, you have the monthly retainers, which is a totally different discussion there on securing those, but you've got some recurring predictable revenue, which means even if, granted, yes, those can churn. I assume you don't have long-term contracts with those retainers that you force them to pay you or anything like that.
No.
They could cancel at any time, but I know people who have, five people paying them $1,000 a month, for a retainer that takes virtually no time, and you can just queue it up into literally like one day a month to do it, knock them all out if you wanted to. And then the benefit there is, okay, so if one of those cancels, you get a 20% hit on your recurring revenue. Which is, that's a big deal, obviously, but it's not as bad as if you have one client who decides to, I've been in the position before. Oh yeah, we're out of money. And it's like, oh, okay. Well, I didn't exactly plan for that. Now I'm stressed out and so on. It's always nice when you have that kind of the backbone supporting you. And especially, the way I look at it is, if you're making, let's say, I don't know what you're bringing on a monthly basis recurring, but let's say it's 5K and then you're doing on average 20K or 15 or 10 or whatever on typical client work. If what you need to live is, let's say, 8K. If you're only off of recurring, there's a 3K a month difference. But if you're bringing in, you have a 15K active work month and then plus the 5K on top of that. So much of the personal finance literature out there and websites and everything is meant for people with 100% predictable income. So biweekly paychecks. And that's what the whole budgeting is. Here's your income. Here's your expenses. Income is usually one thing. It's your salary. And then you have expenses, which are your, the things you're stuck with every month. And, it's very tailored to that. And I a lot of people struggle with, well, my income fluctuates or, I could go a month with nothing coming in. And I think, what should happen is twofold, I think. One is having that backbone of recurring. But the second is just being smart and not splurging when you have a $25,000 a month and, just making sure, okay, if my burn rate a month is eight grand, I'm going to, I can splurge on maybe 15 of that, but I'm going to dump the other 10 into savings account or into my buffer.
Right. Yeah. I think a lot of people who are listening to this are probably thinking, if I made that much, guys, it'd be fine. And the truth is though, that part of the issue is not for a lot of freelancers, is not that their income is too bumpy. It's that it's not enough. Like I think the difference between what they're spending kind of on an average basis per month and what they're making on an average basis, they don't have enough difference there. And so anything you can do, especially just over the course of a few months, to save as much money as you can, like you said, to build up a buffer, and then to cut your expenses a little bit, maybe in those months, just to help that buffer. because I can tell you that having like 3 to 6 months of cash in the bank is probably one of the biggest accelerants for your income as a freelancer, because it lets you fire bad clients. It lets you turn down bad jobs. It lets you make investments in yourself. It gives you like this huge psychological boost that it's really hard to, I think it's hard to understand until you've been there. So you'll have to take my word for a little bit, but I'll just tell you, like, whenever you have 6 months of cash in the bank, and so to the point where, like, if I don't get a job for 6 months, it's not a big deal. It's hugely freeing to take big chances on yourself that in my experience pay off more than any other investment I've ever done.
Well, that's the whole, like, I mean, like, Dave Ramsey is a big kind of personal financial, I think he actually lives in Nashville, but
he does. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, that whole, you know, he has that whole idea of building up a safety net and having it be right. like 6 months of your income. Now, you know, that's, I think that's very, what you should do, especially if you're an employer or something. But I think you hit the nail on the head in that, when you have that, you know, a lot of the bad decisions we make boil down to needing money. So like when you're desperate for money, you will do things like accepting work that sucks or negotiating down your rate or something like that. Yep. And, you know, it reminds me of I don't know if you ever watch Showtime, but they have a show called Billions, I think.
Oh, I'm watching it.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. So you remember the first episode where they talked about the, I won't curse, but the FU money, right? Where, you know, like it's money that allows you to basically tell people, I mean, maybe you don't say it this overtly, but, you know, F you, like, I'm not going to do that. Or I don't need that. I don't need you, your business. And, you know, a lot of the people, like, I've seen firsthand that people who struggle with niching or struggle with like making big business leaps and changing strategies or whatever, what's holding them back is often the reliance they have on their immediate cash flow. So, you know, they're so dependent on the way things are right now that they're unwilling to make big leaps, because if they screw up, they think, well, they're going to be in hot water. Versus when you've got that cushion, when you have 6 months of you could get nothing, no more money at all, and you're fine, it allows you to take bigger risks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I looked this up the other day. From the time I started freelancing to now, I've grown my income by more than 9x. And I think a lot of people would say, like, it's probably easy to get your personal finances together if your income is 9 times higher than it used to be. But the truth is that my income is 9 times higher because I got my personal finances together, because like I was able to create this cushion and this psychological space for myself to be able to really treat my business like a business, not like, oh my God, I've got to make some money this week because otherwise like I'm going to get evicted from my apartment or I'm not going to be able to pay for food. Like that is a horrible, horrible place to be in to try and make like sane, self-respecting decisions about how you deal with your business and how you deal with your clients.
Right. Again, like almost every dumb decision I've ever made with business has in some way, whether consciously or not, tied back to fear. And that fear was, fear that related to money, you know. And when, you know, I've done the, like, you know, thanks to honestly the automated stashing money away and treating it like a bill and forgetting that it was even there, because I mean money that's just sitting in a checking account wants to be used. So, you know, if you can get it out into different savings accounts or you know, hybrid stock bond accounts or, you know, whatever.
I have always used Ally some other online checking account, partly because it takes 2 or 3 days to transfer.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't want, like, that money,
it's not hugely liquid.
Accessible.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that has been a great place to like stash emergency fund type stuff. I get like a checkbook usually for that account. So like if I had to, I could like go to the bank and deposit a check, but that's a hassle too. Like, I just don't want it to be easy for me to spend any of that money.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I've done this. I mean, I'm using Betterment now, and it's, I mean, it's not a money market like Ally is, but it, you know, bonds are pretty, pretty safe. And even if I lose a few percentage, whatever, you know, but yeah, I think the big thing, I mean, it sounds like the things that have been hugely helpful for both of us has been just, you know, making that clear line in the sand distinction between business and personal, And on top of that, also making sure that you're, I mean, I'm sure people who are more, maybe more kind of like on top of things than I am, or have the personal ability to say, all right, I'm going to make sure that at the end of each year, I have 11,000 in my checking account that I can just spend without any repercussions. But for me, I need to be able to say, no, I'm going to put a few hundred a week and do it. And then it'll get to 11,000 at the end of the year.
Yeah. I think a lot of people think that they are a lot more disciplined than they are.
That's like
they're
what not I was really. Looking
for. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. But the truth is, like, we all have cognitive biases and we all have our own flaws and stuff. So I think the easier you can make it on yourself to where you don't have to expend any willpower or minimal willpower to make these things happen, the better. I'm curious to know actually from you about kind of like the more personal side of your personal finances. And I mean, I can talk about this too, but, you know, one thing I hear from a lot of freelancers is that is just like the impact of freelance and their finances has on their personal life and, how they deal with it from like a relationship standpoint and so forth. And I would just wonder if you have any thoughts on that aspect of it.
You mean just how, like, what the uncertainty at times, how it affects personal stuff, or
The uncertainty, and because, like, you know, like, I think we're both at the point now where our income is maybe not predictable, but kind of like the baseline is predictable enough that, like, we can budget off of it and we have a lot more stability around it, but, you know, whenever a lot of people, like whenever they're starting off, like they don't have that stability. And I'm just wondering, like, how you dealt with that in the early years where, like, you know, you didn't know necessarily, like, on some months, like, how you're going to do freelance wise.
Yeah. I mean, I've always, it affected my wife more than me. I've always been more of a gambler, I think, and things like that. So, because, I mean, I look at it like, so I, one of my guilty pleasures is, which doesn't bode well considering I'm going to Vegas next week, is I like playing blackjack. I like playing poker. I like playing craps. And, you know, when you're at a table, a blackjack table, and you've got your stack of chips, I mean, you don't see it as when I put, you know, $20 out on to bet, I'm not spending $20. I don't look at it like that. Or when I get, if let's say I'm dealt blackjack and I get, you know, 30 back or whatever it would be, I don't look at it as like, oh great, I just, you know, now I have $30 of expendable money, now I have just more leverage, right? It's more like, I've always thought more like that, and I've treated even personal finance away a bit like that too, where I don't treat it as like, you know, money put into my account is my money and I need to look at it like that. And if money's not going in on a predictable way, I'm going to freak out and panic and everything else. But I mean, I made not a mistake, but it's what happened. I ended up starting freelancing, both with a new mortgage and with a new baby on the way. So that was, I mean, it, from like a, and you hear this a lot, like people are like, oh, I'll have kids when my finances are fine. And then my parents always said, oh, you know, that'll probably never happen, so just do it anyway. Like, if you're gonna have kids, just have kids. And I mean, fortunately, I think I credit actually getting married and having that happen with wanting to actually build a really stable business. Otherwise, I'd probably not care as much, honestly. But yeah, I mean, it was early on when things were a lot less predictable. It was very, I mean, there were times where it was down to the wire, and the biggest thing was with, it wasn't as bad with my own when I was just freelancing myself, but when I started the agency and I had no idea what I was doing starting out, outside of like, I was getting all this referral work, I should hire people. Well, that immediately, you want to talk about ways to like multiply your monthly bill, your monthly expenses, you know, an employee costs 10 grand a month. Is what, you know, for me. So if I got three employees now, what used to cost me, you know, if it used to cost 8,000 to live a month, now I'm looking at 38,000 to live a month, which is kind of a big difference. So if there's any upsets there, then it became a little more. And yeah, I mean, there was one time I had to borrow money from a friend of mine. I mean, granted, I paid him back within a month, but still, I hated doing that because I hated needing to do that. And that's the kind of stuff, honestly, was just running into that again and again. Granted, on smaller things that weren't always a huge deal, but it still made me very uncomfortable. That forced me to kind of do what I'm doing now, which is, okay, how can I ever avoid being in that situation again?
Yeah.
And that's what led me to doing a lot of this stuff I'm doing now.
Yeah. It's really interesting. I in terms of like, how can I ever avoid that? Like I often feel like people who go through something like this isn't traumatic in the way that some people's experiences are. And so I don't want to downplay other people's like genuine trauma, but like my wife and I went through a period in 2009 in particular, where like we were right on the brink. There were several months where our rent check would overdraft. And then like a few days later, like I'd get a payment from a client and like pay off the overdraft thing. Just like really, and we were living in San Francisco, and I remember just being so like just having such weight on my shoulders and feeling like maybe we just need to leave, or I just need to get a job or something. And we stuck it out and we managed to make it work. But I feel like I still have like, I have a scar from that experience, like that I will always have. Like I'll always be like, I don't know, worried about kind of like, you know, something changing or something happening or whatever. I don't know. It's just interesting. And then the gambling thing that you mentioned is interesting too, because I don't really think of myself as a gambler, but I definitely have this like hustling mentality where I feel like if I need 30K and I don't have 30K, like it's okay. I can just go get it.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal. But that can really, you know, most successful freelancers and consultants that I know are actually really good at sales. And I have found that I'm actually really good at sales. But people who are good at sales like often get themselves in trouble because they know they're good at sales. And so they spend as if they've already made the sale. And it's, you know, they get themselves into this really bad, stressful cycle where, you know, their spending is a lot more loose than it should be because they just assume like, that's fine. Like I can go hustle and get the money if I need to, which works until it doesn't. And whenever it comes crashing down, it can be a really painful experience. So.
And that was honestly, that was my mentality for a while, which was, okay, I have a skill that's very in demand. If I ever am like, I was never the type, I mean, I always looked at it like when I started freelancing, I used to joke saying my backup plan is getting a job. Like, you know, like, so, cause I knew, I mean, the state of the market, the fact that, you know, in my case, people who can build Ruby on Rails apps, pretty in demand. I've got enough business acumen to probably work. Like I could probably do pretty well if I wanted to go and get a job. Like I would know what to say, know how to present myself, know how to say, hey, here's how I can help your business. And like, same stuff I do with clients, just to a client of one, being an employer. So yeah, I mean, I just looked at it as, okay, so if this doesn't work, I don't foresee myself in a cardboard box under the bridge. Like I know it will work out somehow. And that, unfortunately, that hubris is what led me to not care at all about finance. It made it so I didn't like think actively about, shouldn't I save money or have retirement savings? You know, I just looked at it as, okay, I'll just keep doing this. And then eventually I'll, you know, make a few million maybe. And that's my retirement nest, you know, like, so anyway, Ryan, this was awesome catching up. always fun to talk shop like this. So, best place for people to find you is at letsmakeapps.io.
So you can check out letsmakeapps.io, which is a lead generation service for freelancers. That was kind of the basis of my outbound, lead generation biz dev stuff for the first few years of freelancing in particular. And I also have a guide that I wrote about the first $1 million from freelancing that I made and kind of the lessons I learned. And if you go to firstmillionisthehardest.com, that's only for listeners of this podcast. You can download that guide, and I've got some special offers, including like a 30% off lifetime discount for Let's Make Apps.ai. So
awesome. Cool. Well, hope I see you in Stockholm.
Yeah. And I'm hoping I can make it. We'll see. I've got a lot of travel this summer.
Well, if not, we've got another US conference in September. So
yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Not then. Cool. Awesome. Well, Ryan, thanks again.
My pleasure.
Have a question for today's guest or want to recommend someone who Brennan should interview? Head on over to doubleyourfreelancing.com/podcast.
Hey, so I hope you enjoyed that interview. Again, I wanted to, I have all these great conversations whenever I'm at a conference and we're sitting around at the after party, you know, way into the night when libations have been poured and everything else. And I just get into these great discussions and I want to continue them. And most importantly, I think for the podcast, I want to continue them in a way where it's not just me and whoever I'm talking to, but me and really the rest of the world, those listening to the podcast who want to be privy to these discussions. So, you know, I'm super excited. I'm about to be leaving for the Double Your Freelancing Conference in Stockholm, Sweden. And I know more conversations like this are going to be happening. So we'll see you next time for another exciting episode of the Double Your Freelancing Podcast.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Double Your Freelancing Podcast. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit doubleyourfreelancing.com. We'll catch you next time.